girl. Hey?
My girl.
What? What do you got?
She got a sack full of pears from the fanny.
Oh, don't tell.
We got talking about pears, and I told her I sure loved them. And then she looked over at Rick, and she asked him if he did, and he said, Miss Annie, you never seen anything like me eating pears? And so she said, well, I'm going to get you a paper sack. You pick you some. And she sat there and told
him. Well, by George, they smell like pears, eh?
Oh, they smell so
good.
Another harvest.
Another, yeah.
Put them right here where we can smell them.
I'll leave them right there. You
I
have
can
to get
smell
one
all the way over here.
That's what it'll get a yellow one and smell the end of it. That's
still
a green one.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them
look green,
another.
Well, I'll warm up your little.
Well, you rode on the wagon.
Well, yeah, and it, you know, I got it. Didn't work too well till I started driving Emma.
So you started driving Emma?
It didn't work well at all because the wagon made too much noise, and when I was sitting behind Coleman, he couldn't hear a word I said.
Oh, you was on his back.
I was at the back, and the wagon made so much noise that he couldn't hear me. And so after about 10 minutes, I realized he couldn't hear what I said, so I just enjoyed the ride. Well, then I decided, just out of the blue, I decided I wanted to drive Emma, so I asked him if I could, and he said, all right. So we swapped places. Well, that was all right, because then I turned and talked back to him, and he could hear me then. And I drove Emma the rest of the way, and so that worked a whole lot better.
You drove Emma.
I drove Emma.
Debbie,
I told him. I told him that the next time he brought her over here, I was going to drive the car over and drive the mule back, and then drive her back for her. That mule was so much fun to drive.
Well, that mule is part human, you know. She's
really fun to drive.
She enjoyed the occasion too, you know. She did.
Well, and that was just what it took to change everything around. He didn't talk about too much going over there. We just sort of chatted, you know, chittered. We didn't talk about too much because it was a little noisy in the wagon.
Oh, was it?
He couldn't keep up with hearing me too well.
Well, that's strange. I thought it'd be quiet. That's one reason, one thing I look for.
Quiet? Everything on that wagon rattled. The wheels rattled, the shafts rattled, the harness rattled.
He didn't drive it on the road, did he?
Well, see, what he does is he can't drive it too far off the road. So he gets Emma right next to the pavement like this, just on the grass.
Oh.
Well, one wheel's on the pavement.
Oh, that makes
and
it
the other,
I thought
and it just goes bam, 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 bam.
Well, I thought what he used to do, he had all that the territory in between the highway and the railroad.
Oh, that's right, Dad.
That's where he drove.
Well, I think it's a ditch. It's too much of a ditch now. He can't get over that far. He just keeps them a little bit off, but he doesn't drive her on the pavement. No, because that hurts her feet. But he just a little bit off.
Yeah, he wouldn't, well, that's something I didn't realize.
Yeah.
You do that.
No, I'm doing fine.
somebody else is getting it tonight. Well, yeah.
I'll get one for you all because they slice up real well for sandwiches.
And that's the only time we can afford them. And I think they're good.
Yeah.
Real ham.
And he came up.
No.
So he must have been behind the blackberry bush or something.
Debbie and Coleman were just driving up, guys, when Rick got there.
Oh, it took you a good while.
Hour and a half. That's how long it takes. He said he left at noon. He left at 12 o'clock to get over here. She went a little faster going home, I think. Even tired. We didn't have to make her hurry too much. She walked right on.
Well, I thought maybe you stopped and rested, let Emma rest.
No, he didn't rest her. He stopped her once when we swapped and I drove, and that's all. He didn't rest her. I guess it wasn't as hot. At midday it was hot, probably. And that's why he rested her coming over.
But it took you an hour and a half to get back?
Well, what time did you get there? I was judging by this morning, by what it took him to get over this morning.
Oh, I see, yeah.
About 6:30, I guess.
And it was 5 when we left. It was just a little after 5, so it was almost an hour and a half.
Gee whiz. You could go on a tour all that time.
He showed me that land that he used to have.
Yeah.
You know? He acts like it's still his land. I was driving by then when we went by, and he just turned like this. Well, they got them signs up for? He says they've got a posted sign, and they've got a Jim Walters House sign, and they've got a little orange. Look, it looks like a smudge pot. I don't know what it is, whether it's a light or what, but they put it by the gate, and Coleman wanted to know what that was that they'd put up there on his land. And as we went by with Emma, he was telling me just what tree his land went. It goes to that live oak tree over there, he says, and back. 19 acres. And he sold it.
19 acres? That's well, really? I just thought he had an acre or two in there.
19, what he told me.
They get their way.
Well, that's where did he live there? I think at one time he lived there. No, he just had the land.
I don't know where he got it.
Well, anyhow, he got rid of it. And there, that we stopped again to get the paper, and that's it. He wasn't quite sure why I was going with him. It didn't quite sink in. We got up to the store, and he'd heard you say stop at the store. He thought I was going to the store. I just wanted to ride to the store. And so he said, he stopped Emma when we got to where the road forked. He said, well, I'm not going to the store, and turned around and waited for me to get out. And I said, I'm not either. I'm going with you. And he kind of looked, oh, he says, how you getting back? You ain't welcome. Oh, he didn't hear. I said, no, I think Ricky's coming over to get me. I said, I just wanted to ride back here behind Emma. So, he said, oh, well, all right. And we went on across the road and went on. And then, like I said, it didn't work too well till we swapped places, and that did it. And you know, I don't think it was even so much that he could hear me better. It was because I was driving Emma, and I was interested in Emma. I think that was it. He just kind of perked up when I was up driving Emma, and he was in the back seat. He could sort of look around, and he was kind of tired when we first started out, you know, and he was really sitting over pretty far. He was tired, and he wasn't really paying very much attention to me. But when I got up there, and he sat back on the other little seat, he kind of straightened up, you know, and he sat back there and got his knees on, his hands on his knees like this, you know, and just sat right up. And when I'd turn around and talk to him, he'd answer right back. And we talked about Emma, and how when he first got Emma, she used to run away every time she saw a car, and now they don't bother her none. And that right then, this big, big lumber truck with big creosote logs on it, you know, those long logs. So it was a long truck, and I saw it coming, and I thought, because I've been riding the horses enough up there to know that those trucks are always longer than they think they are. And the horse will see them coming, and they'll think it's just a regular truck, and then it keeps going, you know, it keeps coming. And it usually gets them. Well, I watched Emma's ears, and they kind of went like this, you know, and then they went forward like this, and she watched this truck coming, and she kind of shook like that. And I remembered, I said, Coleman, I don't think she likes this. This is a little longer than she's used to. He said, yeah, she didn't. I said, did you watch her ears moving on that? She didn't like that very much. He said, oh, but she didn't run away, did she? I said, no, I don't guess she'd run away anymore. And he said, no, he didn't think she would.
Yeah, that's mild what I'd do with those old trucks right on the side of the road. I'd get off the road.
Well, when we got there, Rick pulled up just as we got there.
That worked out just fine, because just as I pulled in, he was out, had the gate open, and Debbie was standing up with this big grin. Get up, Emma! Get up, Emma! So we pulled him in, and I just said to Coleman, you know, Coleman, I don't know how to unbuckle this thing, and let him just take over. And he said, all right, now you see that chain back there? And I said, yeah, all right, now unhook that and hook it over here where I am. So I took it off. An old rusted chain, you know, and the rings on it are chipping, and I figure most people would have replaced it by now. They still do. So I hung it up there. And then he said, now undo that buckle and buckle it back. That way it won't be so long, it won't drag in the ground. And the buckles, the leathers are dried and cracked and short. Now, you know, where the holes have been, they've cracked and broken off in spots. But it still works fine. These ones wired on a little piece, you know. And then he just walked in before it, and I held on to the bars that came out of the front of the wagon, and he just walked forward and says, all right, now you lift those down. And then he just took off the collar and the rest of the rig. And everything I could see had pieces of twine holding parts of the leather strap on and wires and everything. Coleman took it off just as gingerly and nicely and took it over and laid it down in the shed. And telling me the whole time about Emma has never been sick in 13 years. He says, there's mornings I can't get that truck started. And I don't know what to do when that happens. But I can always get that mule going. Now he's telling me this and how she used to run away. He takes all the rig off. Still had her hackamore on, and just left her. And I thought, Well, now she's loose. I wasn't holding on to her. And you told me stories about running away, and she never got away from me, he said. And he went over, set it down, and Emma just stood right there. And he came back and said, she don't get away from me much anymore.
I love to watch him work with that mule. I just loved watching him plow with that mule. He doesn't call her Emma when he works with her. Get up there, mule, he says.
Oh, he's harsh.
Yeah, and his voice is just, he's rough when he talks to that mule, you know. Mm. It, no matter what he's telling her, when he talks to her, it's rough, you know. Gee, there, mule. Back up, mule.
he was going to let me plow a little bit. Go on, Emma. Go on, you know. She just stood there. And then from the back, I heard this bell. Get on there, mule. She picked up and went on.
And I said to him when I was driving Emma, I said, you know, Emma's had a pretty hard day today, I said. I guess she's going to rest tomorrow. Oh, he said, she gets enough rest days. I said, yeah, I guess really she should just be working every day, shouldn't she? Every day except Sunday. He said she could do it. She could do it right now if I'd feed her. She could work 7 days a week till Saturday night and not work again till Sunday morning and just work right on. And she could do it. Just if I fed her a little bit of grain. I ain't got enough grain to feed her. I said, well, Coleman, what do you feed her? You give her a little corn? Oh, no, he says, I give her oats. I can feed her more out of 100 pounds of oats than I can feed her out of 100 pounds of corn. He said, I know. I've done it. I know when I measure. And she gets more out of them oats than she does out of corn. But she could work right on, he said. She could do it right now. This ain't nothing.
Well, she sure looks healthy and hearty.
She's pretty slick, yeah.
Pretty slick.
And never showed a strain the whole time. Just pulled a plow right on.
And he said, I was talking to him down here. He said, I can't let her. The horses were making a lot of commotion. I said, Coleman, and Emma's got a few people to speak to on the way in. He said, oh, I can't let her see them. He said, you know, a mule will follow a horse. He said, if I let her stay over here long enough to see them horses, she'd bust out of where I was keeping her and come right back over here to be with these horses. I said, is that right? Oh, he said, all you got to do is get one horse and a bunch of mules, and the mules will follow the horse. They just love horses.
I didn't know that
at all. When we sat on the porch.
That was nice. That was nice. Because Miss Emma just looked at us. I mean, Miss Anna just looked at us and said, well, coming into the house, aren't you? You know, I mean, there was no question about it.
She was just glad you came.
And you were right, you know, if she defers to Coleman, she doesn't talk if Coleman's talking. So Coleman talked. But she was rocking and listening. But she didn't talk as long as he did. But he held forth. Good golly, he got himself propped up against one of those posts, you know, and he took off. He had one thing
sitting
on his...
Sitting on the floor.
Yeah, over there by the mum.
Yeah.
The big blue flower. Yeah, sat right on one of the flowers.
Yeah.
Just saddled up to the porch and sat out on it.
And that dog was so crazy to see him. That dog that he thinks bites everybody, and he's always running to tie it up. But he let it go, and the dog kept jumping on him all the time.
Yeah, get down there, just like he was talking to people.
Yeah.
Rub on him. And none of them pay any mind to him.
None of them too bad. But he had one thing on his mind, and he just worked everything around it. He kept coming back to it.
And he started it, too.
He started it, and that's all he wanted. You know, you could get him off on other things, but he just had that one thing on his mind, and you can just watch him come back to it every time. And he'd read it in the paper about that little girl, little baby that got lost in the woods, little two-year-old baby that got lost in the woods a week ago. And that was worrying him because he knew all the things that could get that baby. And he proceeded to tell us what they were. Panthers, the rattlesnakes.
And the bobcat.
The bobcat. And it wasn't like he was talking about the little child being lost. But he'd tell us why, you know, a bobcat will get on a dog and crook up both their fingers. What did he call it?
Claws.
He didn't say, no, he said crook up, like, I forgot what he called them. And they'll crook up the front and they'll crook up the back and they'll just rake that dog. He said a bobcat's what'll tear a dog up. If you don't have two dogs, the bobcat will just get that dog. And he was just worried about that child. And that's what he talked about.
Mm-hmm. And it was nice. He just mentioned the child, and then, you know, I said, I don't reckon there's much chance she'd be alive if they find her. And then he turned to me and said, you know, I used to say there was no panthers around here until I'd seen one, and that's been just a few years ago. And I've seen one, and it was black. And he went on to tell us about this panther.
Yeah.
And then I'd forgotten about the child, everything. I was just trying to catch on to what he was saying. And all of a sudden he said, now that child out there crying and making noise, that panther could come around there. And then he picked up on bobcats. And Marvin Townsend came down here one night.
Mm.
And he says, Coleman, I don't want to scare you now, but I got something to tell you. I've seen a bobcat in the road, so I'm with the lights in the car, just a little piece down there.
Oh.
And we just go right on off into bobcats and rattlesnakes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, he said rattlesnakes don't like dogs. They will get a dog faster than anything else. He said they'll get a dog when they won't get a person can step right over them, he said, and they won't get a person unless they step on him, but they hate dogs. He said, I was coming down that road there, riding a horse, and I had a dog in front of me. Well, the dog ran by, and that snake heard my horse coming, heard the clop, clop of his hoof. He heard his feet on the ground. He said, before I knew it, I looked around, and that snake was up in the air, as high as he could go, coming over like that.
Backwards,
striking backwards, he said. But he just missed us. He wasn't long enough, and he hit the ground and took off as fast as he could go into the bushes, and I couldn't get down there fast enough to kill him. He didn't get us that first strike, he didn't try again. And Rick said, because we'd been talking about the dogs, well, I guess that dog made him mad. And Coleman kind of, I don't think he thought about that, because he said, yeah, that must have been the dog that made that snake think he could get something when the horse went by.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Said he was just going to strike the next thing came along, and that was me. I asked him, you ever got bit, Coleman? She said, no. But you see out there where that truck is? And he said, I had a dog out there, and I heard him bark. And before he got over to here, he was down. The snake had got him. I said, I picked him up and carried him on back to the house. He wasn't living where he is now. He said, you know, I never knew a dog was so heavy till I had to carry that one. He said, I finally had to kill it. And then we went back there, and this other fellow was with him. And he said, you know, I'm going to get me a stick, because I don't know, that snake might still be there. So I cut me a long one, and it was flexible. And I went back, and I saw him, and I beat him to the gopher hole, and I killed him. And he said, and I could see where that dog had been digging around that hole and probably stuck its head in there, and that snake struck him just above the eye. Right there in the gopher. But for a full day's work, his voice hadn't faded. When he said bobcat or wildcat, it came out wildcat. And he just kind of made you sit up in your chair.
Yeah.
And he leaned against that post and just took his feet. Hello? Yes. Hi, Bessie. Well, pretty good. You guess you'll do.
I told Fetty to call Bessie this morning, and I don't guess she did. She wanted to bring that boy by.
Mm.
You know, just a bit.
Well, Coleman said next week he figured we'd better hoe them. And then he said, there's only 8 rows with all of us over there. It won't take us no time at all. He's really got the whole crew.
Well, that's the beauty of it. If you have to hoe a field, a row at a time, it just takes forever. You need 4 or 5 rows going at one time. Uh-huh. Yes, sir.
You're saying it was really something about those tears, too. I was standing there looking at him, and I was saying that, I just said, why, your pears are ready to pick, Miss Annie. And she looked at him, and she said, what month is this? I said, it's August now. She said, that's right, August and September is when I can, when I put them up, can them. She said, her daughter always comes, end of August, and they all get together, she and her daughter, the only child they got, and Coleman. And they put up the pears. Coleman peels them. And her daughter helps her. She, Miss Annie, kind of straightened herself up like this. And she said, but I cook them. And I said, you know, let Coleman cook them? He thinks he can cook them. I said, you don't think he can? And she just kind of looked like. And then she asked Rick if he liked them. And he told her about how last summer there'd been a bowl of them on the table, and Faye had to take it off the table because he was eating so much, and that settled it, and she went and got a bag so we could pick some and take them along.
Mm-hmm. That voice, she still had that voice.
Yeah. You could hear it, and I said, something about just something about the pears, and she goes, uh-huh. But when it came out, it was uh-huh.
Yeah.
It was just musical.
Yeah.
It's a little thing like that.
Yeah.
It's the up and down. And she well, Coleman does too. You say, let me think. She was saying it so much, but she'd say, does after something. You'd say, them like them pears do make good preserves. Does, she'd say. You know, just saying, kind of reinforcing what you're saying. So. Well, I can't think of it.
I didn't notice Coleman doing that.
He did it. I have. He doesn't do it as much as Miss Annie does, but he does. Rick and I were saying that 20 years makes a difference. John Turner and Coleman. About John Turner coming when he says. Yeah.
Last year, he did. John Turner did.
Mm-hmm.
But this year he's taking on too much. If I'd known he had all that other, you see, I wouldn't have.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
But now Coleman drove right by there. He didn't linger. He went through here. He didn't go to the lane over to the gap. Heading right on over there by herself, it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, Faye got out there. And when I got out there, he's already loaded the fertilizer.
Yeah, we got that up.
He loaded?
No, we did.
Oh.
He's real pleased to have that other 100 pounds. He said he'd put that to the vines that we cut from. And he said in 2 weeks, you'd never know we'd cut anything. He said they were coming back already.
It worked out just fine. Because they do appreciate a little token.
Mm. Yeah, he was really pleased with that. He told me just where to set it down. And I took hold of the bag, and I forgot it was 100 pounds. I was thinking it was a 50-pound feed bag. He said, oh, now that's 100 pounds. And he stuck his arms under and just kind of floated up. And I went, whew.
And he said, "Oh, I used to throw these around," he said.
He's still got a little in his arms, I tell you. Because I just went to, it just kind of popped up in my hands. I thought, good Lord.
Well, at least you had a dirt road from the creek road on up there.
That's right, and that was nice there because it's just sand. There's nothing to bang the wheels on at all. And now it looked like it was coming up rain. The sky was real black, and Coleman thought maybe we'd get caught in the rain. He kept saying, "You see that switch there? You get that mule. Hit her a little bit with it." But by that time, Emma was so happy to be getting on home.
She
just picked up and went anyway.
Yeah.
She knew where she was.
Yeah.
I think if I'd asked him if I could drive the mule at the beginning, he wouldn't let me. I think the reason that he let me drive the last part was that he knew she knew the way.
Oh, yeah.
After she got about halfway home, she knew where she was going, and
yeah.
I didn't really have to do anything
yeah.
to hold the line.
Yeah.
And he knew what he was doing.
Especially
after we crossed down and started down the road to home. He just said, I said, Coleman, you want to drive her on home? Oh, he said, she knows the way. Like,
you know,
you're just a useless appendage up there, but you can think you're driving her if you want.
You know, I told you what Miss Blissom said. She's out in all that wooded country there in Georgia. Her daddy says, now you've got sense enough if you get lost not to try to show that horse the way home.
You know, I said, Coleman, you probably had a lot of mules. He said, no, Emma was only the fifth one he'd ever had. He said, I always had horses. I always brought up my own horses, raised my own horses. And he could just count, and he sort of leaned back and counted. He said, five. Emma was the fifth one. Of course, he's had her 15 years now.
Yeah. And she was 8 years old when he got her.
Maybe, he said. Maybe you just never know she could have been.
I don't know how it is over at his place. I thought it was a little stuffy over there. I don't know whether the air circulates or not. Because it's partly, I guess it's partly all those shrubs there in the yard.
It's pretty thick.
Well, but it's it's cool though. Some of the trees are big. That camphor tree in the backyard is the biggest tree I've seen, except for the one that's in Miss Chitty's yard, that pecan tree. And I said to Miss Annie that sure was a big camphor tree, and she said, yeah. She said Coleman's mama had planted it 40 years ago. And I said, well, it must have been pretty big when she put it out. She said, oh no, it was just a slip. And it's so big it's crowding the pear trees now. She looked at it and kind of frowned. The healthiest looking tree you ever saw. Nothing but new green leaves all over it. And she sort of looked at it and she said, it's growing too much. I got to get somebody up there to cut a little bit of it down. I said, that's the biggest camphor tree I ever saw, Miss Annie. She said, yeah, it's the biggest one I've ever seen too. I never seen one that big, she said.
Well, it's right out there in the open where it fills out.
That's it. It doesn't have anything crowding it.
Well, I've ridden in a steel-tired wagon all the way to the Hatless Campground in Spencer Bay for the revival. Got back way after dark, sat in the wagon. And the country goes by so slow, you can just see it, you can see it, and then you can also have thoughts about it. You pass somebody's place and you can think about all the children that go up there.
That's a nice one, isn't it?
And I think of it, those steel tires you see in the dirt, and just silent. Now you see, when they passed here this morning, I didn't even hear them. They happened to be standing up there, and she saw it. She said, "That's Coleman driving Emma, and that one horse wagon." I still didn't hear him.
That was the same. Yeah.
Fan or no fan, see? Just think what a different world it is.
This Daisy has a beautiful thing on that. The wagon, they all get in the wagon and go out to work in the field, and as they're going along, they talk to themselves, and then they talk to people along the way. And she has the most beautiful thing on it. It's just so different from all. And she says, you get in a car and you just whiz. She sees things and sees things in the wagon.
Coleman did that. She talked to everybody that was in the yard all the way to the store. He talked to Miss Daisy. He spoke to her when we went by. She was on her porch. And he spoke to her enough to say, not just to say hi, howdy, and wave his hand. He said, hi, and I said, there's Miss Daisy, because he didn't see her on her porch. And he turned around and he said, howdy. And she answered, howdy. And he said, you doing all right now? And she said, I'm doing all right. How's Miss Annie? And he said, Miss Annie's just doing fine. So it was an exchange of more than just hi. And then when we got up to the corner, where you turn to go to the store, the cluster of houses there, there were a lot of people out in the yard there. And he talked to everybody, said howdy, and they said hi, and they were really glad to see him. Everybody turned around. They were really glad to see Coleman. And what you doing up there? They said. And what happened? Oh, they followed us.
Emma didn't mind.
We scared a lot of cows. Some of the cows that were. In the pasture, they took one look at that wagon coming and Emma, and took off running as fast as they could. And Coleman just kind of chuckled and he said, "I guess they've never seen a mule and wagon before." And that's when we got off on how a lot of people hadn't seen a mule and wagon either. So I said, "Yeah, never ridden in one either."
That turned around. He started. When he started, that's all it was. Every now and then you saw a car.
You know, we were out here for a good while before I knew that Coleman had a car. I don't know that he did. Well, maybe he did. But he would be at the store, or he'd make trips up and down this front road, and he was always driving out.
Always driving.
He never drove a car.
He says this was great pleasure. He says, you know, it got to be where everybody sold their mules. In fact, they just about give them away to get rid of them. I said, but you know, the Woods had to give $150 to get that mule they got now. I said, everybody's wanting to get a mule again.
Well, you know, Cookie keeps talking about he's got, he can sell all the mules he can get.
He thought we were foolish and not taking Ada.
I think so too. I agree. Ada was, that was the biggest mistake we ever made.
we even missed our chance to get a plow horse. He's taking off the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Old Queen. Yeah.
She's gone. Maybe he's just plowing.
Plows are over here. Cookie
pie. He talk about it.
Yeah.
He would like to.
I think he would. Emma is one of my first
love in the countryside.
Hey, she's my love too. She does. Yeah. It's I think I know somebody's ready for a shower.
Oh,
they're mine. They just stay wet every day. Well, they're so dirty, and it'll do them good to get rained on. They need to wash some of the dirt off.
One of these days we'll get to
the window. Well, I tell you, we don't need to hear everything. I'm ready for a little report. I understand things happened in town today.
Well, they sure did. There was quite a crew of us. It was me and Florida May and little Bessie and Sonny in the car going. And everywhere we went, all four of us would get out of the car and go in.
Oh, yeah.
And we went a lot of places. We went to the bank, and we went to the funeral parlor, and we went to the airport, and we went to the grocery store, and we went to the florist, and we went to the cemetery. And all four of us went everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, I started the trend of going in because I told Sonny it was air conditioned every place we went. He better come in or he'd get hot. So he came in to the bank and then everywhere else. Well, I thought, I guess I never realized that when preparing for a funeral is sort of like preparing for a wedding or preparing for a christening or something like that. I mean, it's a big event, and there's a lot of preparation to do. So we, and I didn't know all the things you had to do at the funeral home before the funeral, sort of like a little rehearsal before, I guess, is how to do it. But Bessie was upset because the obituary wasn't in the paper. And she was really on a tear when we got down there. She wasn't going to let them get off if we had not, correcting that. And there's a little sign by the door when we went up that said ring for attendant, and we got this little attendant who looked a little too meek for Bessie, and I could tell right away that he wasn't going to stand up to Bessie, and he didn't. He had to get help. he got, I guess, the man who was sort of in charge, and Bessie went into him about why the obituary wasn't in the paper, and he said, well, his paper got rained on yesterday, and he guessed he'd go right out and get one. Bessie was sitting down there in the hall, and there was a door right next to her that said exit. And he tried to go out, and it was locked, and he was so flustered, because Bessie'd been kind of lighting into it, and he was so flustered that he whipped around and sort of ran out the front door to get a paper. And he came back in, and he made this big show of sort of rattling the paper, and it was wide open like this, like he was looking for the obituary, wide open like this. And then he went and got on the phone to the Gainesville Sun. Well, there were five of us there then. There was Sonny and me and Bessie and Florida May and the other attendant. And we all stood and they all watched him and listened to him while he made this telephone call to the Gainesville Sun. And oh, was he official. He'd call and he'd say, "You mean there's nobody here to count that can help me with this? You mean there's only one person that can help? Well, yes, I'd like to speak to him, please." And after a while, he came back over and he said, "It's already in today," he said to Bessie. "Don't worry about it. They just got fouled up yesterday." He said, "I spoke to the city editor." Well, Bessie felt all right then. She said, "It's not his fault, It's really the newspaper's fault." And Florida May said, "Yes, yes." Florida May backs up. She just carries on a constant backup. "Yes, yes, ain't it so? Ain't it so? Anything you say, just right along next." Well, we went to the airport after that, and Sonny went and got his ticket, and there was a pretty long line, so it was hot, and I said I was going to go in and buy a fall of Coke, and Florida May said, "Oh, I couldn't do that, no, I couldn't do that, I couldn't do that, how could she ever thank me?" And I said, "Well, you just wait, I'll get you a Coke," and I went in and I got some Coke, and I went back out, and Florida May said, "How can I ever thank you? I can't thank you. How can I thank you? How can I thank you for getting me this Coke?" And I said, "You just did." I said, "Don't worry about it, Florida May. Sometime I'll come to your house and you can get me a Coke." "Oh," she said, "you better do that." So by then we were having a pretty good time after, after we'd been to the funeral home. We were really pretty much comrades in everything we did. All four of us climbing out of the car and going in everywhere. So we went to the, we left the airport, and little Bessie said, well, she had some money from the family up in New York, and she wanted to go to the Florida that Mrs. Miles and I had gone to and get some flowers there because she liked those flowers so much. And I knew where it was, didn't I? And I said, yeah, it's on University Avenue. So we got there. But I'll tell you one thing, driving with little Bessie is really an experience. She drove in, and then after we went to the funeral parlor, she let Sonny drive, but she told him how to drive. So she essentially drove the car the whole time. But little Bessie drives. She's not really used to cars, is what it is. See, she only learned to drive about 10 years ago. And she gets herself way back like this, and then she gets those big hands on the steering wheel, and she kind of braces herself like this. She gets her elbows braced, and then she gets her foot out like this so that, you know, she has leverage on the brake while she's got power brakes. And she, if she sees a car stopping, you know, a mile away, she slams on the brakes like this, and everybody in the car goes like this, except Bessie, because she's braced behind the steering wheel. So we rode in sort of going like this all the way. Well, then she let Sonny drive, only she told him how to drive, and she'd tell him which lane to get in. You know, she'd say, now, Sonny, you're going to have to turn left. We turned out of the airport. We were going to go down to University Avenue. It's a good 5 miles down the road. Sonny, you stay over to the right because we're going to take a right-hand turn now. You just stay over to the right. And he turned onto University Avenue, and he turned out into the left-hand. Get over into the right lane, she said. We're going to turn right. Well, 3 miles later down the road, we turned right. Bessie says, I like to plan where I'm going, she said. So we got to the florist, and we all got out, all of us, and went in. And Bessie started looking at the wreaths, and they have a lot of things that you can get there, wreaths and crosses and things. And she was looking at them and trying to decide which one she wanted, which color mostly she wanted to get. And Sonny was helping her, so I just kind of walked down, and I was looking at some of the other things in the shop. And Florida May followed me down, and she said, I can't get to my money. And I thought, well, what does she mean? And she said, I got my money and I can't get to it, and I want to get something while I'm here. And I thought, well, maybe she didn't want little Bessie to know how much she was spending for this. And so I started to say something about that. And Florida May leaned back and she hit herself right in the stomach. Pow! Just like that. And she said, it's here. I can't get to it. I can't get my money, she said. She had it in a girdle. You think the car's open? I can get out there and get it. And I said, yeah, I don't think Sonny locked the car. You go on. So she went running out the door, and I went back up to where Sonny and little Bessie were finishing buying the wreaths and everything. And after a while, Florida May came back, and she had Kleenex wadded up in her hand, and she had this big wad of a $20 bill in her hand, too, that she snatched out of her girdle. And then she had to pick what she was going to send. Well, trouble was that Sonny had bought a cross and little Bessie had bought a wreath, and that didn't leave very much for Florida May because they had, the only other things they had were those little pillows and little hearts. Well, the trouble with those was it was just all styrofoam. There weren't really any flowers. It was just a styrofoam heart and maybe one flower, one little red flower. So Florida May didn't like that very much. She wanted flowers. And she looked, and she had everybody in the store looking with her. The whole store. We were the only people in the store. And she had the sales girl and the woman who was making the arrangements and Mr. Thompson or Johnson, who owns the store.
But one person at
well,
all.
Well, she had Mr. Johnson talking about, she asked him how much an arrangement was. She picked out this arrangement with a little Greek cherub underneath it like this. And she wanted to send, how much was that? And he looked at it, and he looked at Florida May, and he said, is this for your home? And she said, no, it's for a funeral. And he said, you know, he was really, really nice about it. He said, you know, I wouldn't give that to a funeral. He said, somebody could just come along and take that little cherub. That little cherub's the valuable part, and somebody just come and take it. I wouldn't send that to a funeral. Mm-hmm. He didn't say, because it's a little naked cherub, I wouldn't send it to a funeral. He just said, mm-hmm, I wouldn't send this cherub. So Florida May picked out something in a pot, hydrangea in a pot, and they had them all delivered to the funeral home. And then we went to the grocery store after that because little Bessie had bottles. Everybody who rode in the back seat rode with their feet up on bottles. So Bessie had the back of the car filled with bottles, and she wanted to turn them. So all four of us piled out of the car and went into the grocery store. Well, we sort of trailed along after little Bessie, like her little chicks, you know. She was up there with running the thing, and we were trailing along behind her. And she buys for other people. She doesn't buy for herself in the grocery store. She was so worried about Miss Daisy. She didn't think Miss Daisy had enough to eat, and so she kept buying things from Miss Daisy. She bought her some brown meat, and she bought her some grits, and she bought her some crackers, and she didn't think she had enough to eat. And then she kept telling Sonny, "Now, Sonny, you go buy yourself some plums. You don't have any plums left. You go buy yourself some plums." And we went down the cookie lane, and Florida May kept going by cookie after cookie and putting them in the car, you know, "For my children," she'd say, and then she'd grin like this. "They're for my children," and she'd and Sonny got a big box of vanilla wafers, and he tossed them in, and he said, "Those are for me." And Florida May just grinned. Well, by then we were pretty good friends by then, all of us. Little Bessie said, What do you like to munch on, Debbie?" I said, "We're not really hungry right now." "Well, I didn't mean right now. What do you like to munch on?" "Sonny, what do you like to munch on?" Sonny said, "Pretzels." And little Bessie said, "Oh, look, pretzels are on special today. 3 for $1. And so she's pulling three bags of pretzels down. And Sonny said, "But I don't like them if you don't buy me any cold beer with them, Bessie." And
now, you think that'd be your last car ride with little Bessie?
Oh, I don't know.
You came back by the cemetery.
Yeah, we came back by the cemetery.
Really pretty. I thought it was going to be down here.
No, it's well, when we left, the man gave them a little marker to put at the gravesite, and Bessie said she thought Nettie marked it. And Sonny's very reasonable with little Bessie. He said, "Well, you know, maybe we ought to just take the marker anyway, and we'll just go by, and if it isn't marked, we'll mark it." And so we went by, and we were driving along and just chattering away. Sonny was telling us about the time Uncle Mitt Washington's horse kicked him in the stomach, and ever since then he's never been able to stand horses. And
Uncle Mitt.
He said, "Well, Florida May started. She said she'd seen us riding the other day." And I said, "Yeah." And Sonny piped up, and he said, "Well, I can't stand horses." He said, "I used to like them until that. Who was that? Miss Liza's husband." Little Bessie said, "Mitt, Uncle Mitt." And he said, "That's right. His horse kicked me one time, and ever since then I haven't liked horses." And Florida May said, "Oh, I remember that horse. Sammy, his name was," something like that. And Sonny said, "Yeah. I went down there I told Uncle Mitt I'd go get him out of that real high grass. What is it, gypsy grass? That real high grass. Yeah, gypsy grass, I think it is. I told him I'd go get him. And I went down and I unchained him, and the horse just started walking up to the house. And so I just walked behind him. And all of a sudden, kapow, whammy." Horse kicked him. Well, just about then, when he's going kapow, whammy, little Bessie says, "Stop the car!" Sonny slams on the brake, and we go whipping around one of the islands like that at 441. That's the best about the cemetery. We just passed it, and she happened to look down the road and notice that it was there. And it's off, it's by Franklin Crate. It's off down the little field across there, and it's way back in the woods. It's a mile and a half, mile back in the woods. Just keep going down the road, and it keeps turning back into the woods. And it's really nice back in there. There's a Jackson family plot back there. It's where Miss Bessie's sister's buried there, and her brother. And little Bessie was pointing out all the her grandmother's buried there. And
Mag is buried there.
Yeah. And I know why they want plastic flowers too, because they stick the plastic flowers around the grave and they just stay there. Well, I've seen some up at this little cemetery too, but they just leave the plastic flowers there because it's no grass. It's like all the little plots are bare, like the sand yards. They keep them clean and pick all the leaves out, and there's no grass or anything. Just this thing. But it's real comfortable little place.
speak for himself.
Well, I'd like to be buried there myself. I thought it was high.
Speak for yourself.
Well, anyway.
Well, now, I didn't get much of a view of Little Missy. Just one partial view when she was raising Cain about the obituary.
Well, she was a little upset, I think, by what she was doing. So. Maybe that. It was real nice. The only thing that I thought was real natural was that when they went in and looked at the casket, and he asked her if everything was all right, and little Bessie said no, that Miss Bessie's hair wasn't combed right. She knew how to comb her hair. And she made him go get a comb, and she fixed it the way, you know, the way Miss Bessie wore her hair.
Well, she told me that was one of the reasons she wanted you to go. Because you knew Mira, and she wanted you to see if she looked like you thought she ought to. She said, I'm the only one that seems to be feeling the responsibility, and I just like somebody else to see if it looks that way. It means a great deal to me, in that that she looks like she's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And the first of the week, she had said, now Friday is the day. That was the day that she was going to see.
Mm-hmm.
So she was in, she had plans.
I think that one of the interesting views was the little man in the funeral parlor. I've never taken part in any kind of funeral preparations, and as a matter of fact, I don't think I've ever really been to a funeral. And he didn't talk. He whispered, and he whispered to Bessie all the time, just whispered in her ear. And I never did understand anything he was saying the whole time we were there. He just whispered, and everybody else. Like if somebody whispers to you, you whisper back, and so we whispered until Bessie wanted to ask. When we came out, we were sitting down, and Bessie wanted to ask Sonny something, and she said, "Sonny," in a normal tone of voice, and Sonny didn't hear. He was down the hall a little ways, and so this little attendant, "No, Bessie, Sonny, Thomas is calling for you." Sonny looked at him, and he said, "What?" I thought it was, but this little man was sort of funny. I think after that we talked normally.
Nobody else in there?
Was she handling the grocery store?
Well, she was buying for everybody else. She had everybody else on her mind this morning, I think. She's thinking about everybody coming tomorrow. Maybe. And yeah, she cares into it. She bought herself some orange juice. She lives on orange juice, and I think so. And she went up to the Astor orange juice, which is her kind, and she buys the big half gallon size. And I said, "Well, Bessie, they're only six for a dollar over there." "Oh, those are too small," she said. "I drink more than that." She said, "These are two for a dollar." And then there was an attendant way down at the other end of the frozen food counter, and she picked up her head and she held one up and she yelled at him, "These two for a dollar?" And he said, "No, they're 55 cents a piece." "Oh," she said, "they're not on sale this week, are they?" He said, "No." But you know, I probably wouldn't have yelled down the counter to him like little Bessie did. No, nobody else. I would have rolled my cart down there. gotten my information and rolled it back. But Bessie wasn't going to waste steps.
Not with that voice.
And she remembered that they had been on sale, but she still didn't buy the 6 bucks a dollar.
They're too small. She buys the half gallon.
I can imagine that she's right direct when she buys groceries. She knows sort of what she wants.
And Florida May, we left Bessie to go through the line, and Florida May said to Sonny, we'll go meet her on the other side. So the three of us went through, and Florida May just sort of stood on one leg and watched little Bessie, and she said, "She's independent. Look at her. She's independent. You can just tell. Look at her, guys. Look at her going through that line." And I looked over there, and there was little Bessie. You know, she's so big. She's just sort of commanding because she's so big.
Mm-hmm.
And she came down that line, you know, and she was just sort of like this, coming down the line, pushing the groceries down the line. And the little girl behind the cash register just sort of looked cowered like this. So Bessie came down. And there's Florida Mayor there. She's independent. Florida May wearing bedroom slippers because I got calluses. She says, "I got calluses this thick on my feet. I can't walk. Oh, am I in misery," she says. And she put on shoes to go into the funeral parlor. And the minute she came out, she took them off again and put on her bedroom slippers. And everywhere else, we all four of us trailed in. Florida May coming along behind in her bedroom slippers.
And little Bessie leading the way.
Little Bessie leading the way, and the rest of us like little chickens behind her.
And little Bessie knew exactly what place she was going next.
Oh, yeah. She planned her route. She's what she said. "I plan where I'm going." That's why we went to the bank first, so we wouldn't have to double back, waste time. The fact that we later drove right by the bank didn't make any difference. Right in front of it.
Well, it might have been too late.
Maybe that was, it might have been, as a matter of fact. The banks closed early, it might have been too late.
Yeah.
That could well be the case.
And if she wanted money to buy, she probably had to go to the bank.
Yeah, had to go to the bank first.
Did she whisper to the attendant?
Yes, when she went in, she did. You know, when somebody whispers to you, you whisper back.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And she whispered to him when he sort of, and he handed all of us around, you know. We walked in, and he took my hand like this, and he took my shoulder like this, and kind of just dragged me in, you know. And then when we left, he was always handing us around, you know. He'd get his hand on your shoulder or something, you know, get you around. And when we left, the steps were pretty steep. And I knew he was down there, and I knew he was going to take my elbow when I got to the bottom, and it still threw me off balance. He grabbed my elbow, and I and almost fell over those steep stairs.
But little Bessie made it all right?
Yeah.
Didn't throw her off balance.
No, she was expecting it, I guess. You know, she knew him. And then so.
Yeah.
She's pretty solid, too. She doesn't get thrown off balance.
She told me that this was one of the hardest things for her to do at first. That's why she wanted some company.
Yeah. Well, we had kind of a merry time, you know, except for when we went to the funeral parlor. The rest of the time we were joking and carrying on, and we'd all go in everywhere. And so we had, you know, it was I'm sure it was easier for us. Because we all went.
Well, what business did you have in the grocery store?
Absolutely none. It was air conditioned. I wanted to go in.
So you just followed them?
I just went in.
And she got her little cart and filled it.
Filled it right up with Sonny's pretzels and Miss Daisy's brown meat and Florida May's cookies. And oh, she did. She bought herself some cheeses. And kept asking me, "What do you like to munch on, Daddy?" And I said, all I want, Bessie, I want some of those peanuts I brought you. I want you to boil me some peanuts. I want to taste what good boiled peanuts are like." Yeah, she said, "I boiled some of them. You know, they picked them too early." I said, "What?" She said, "They shouldn't have picked them now. They're still too green." I said, they are. They're white, she said. I think what it is they're supposed to dry.
Well, some of them haven't made. She probably just got hold of a few of those.
But I thought, well, that's Little Bessie, you know. Little Bessie did. I bring her a Coke, and she says, oh, why didn't you bring me a 7-Up? Or, why is this little Coke? Why don't they have big Cokes with Fred's anymore? Yeah, you know, it wasn't so much that the peanuts were green. It was
well, now, you're rewriting your report. And putting her in it. You didn't put her in it before. And she's the only one I was interested in. So you're just going back upstairs and start rewriting her.
She's putting her in now.
Yeah. Whenever you're out on an expedition like that, you can sit down all you want to sit down in an hour, hour and a half. Sometimes not that much. The way you write. I'm asking
well,
you.
I don't know. It kind of depends. I mean, I can put down just real sketchy sort of a sketchy sort of thing, not filling it out quickly. But when I stop and try to fill it out the first time, then it takes longer. And it's usually not as good either to try to fill it out the first time. So you should go through something first and then go back and do it again.
You mean you type it first and then you retype it? Recompose it?
I don't know. I was just thinking that it would take longer if you try to fill it out the first time.
I was just asking if you practice it all. I think you can do a pretty good job the first time. At least you get it down. And then once you get it down, it sticks in your mind, and you rewrite it in your mind, don't you? You clear your mind when you clear your typewriter?
No.
I don't. When I get in the typewriter, it stays in my mind, and where I can see it. I can't see it until I get it down on the type. I can't. That's just the way my mind works. I'm not bragging about it. I'm more or less apologetic.
Well, there would be one thing, it seems to me, in an excursion like today, you could just be factual and just say, we went here and there and there, and fill in what you did and you went. And then you'd have to look at it, who do you want to see? And
well, from what you said, there wasn't anybody else to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't seem to matter. See, Florida May, she's sure herself, but she just backed people up today.
Yeah, she couldn't show with Bessie. Mm.
So, I don't know about Florida May's talking ability. She's a great, she talks out of school. She would tell everything. And that's, I was warned about that, so I've been afraid of her.
She just backs up, yeah.
Well, did you get any new light at the typewriter?
What mostly was that, what Debbie brought up is the field of the occasion. It's an entirely different kind of talk than the, from the kitchen table.
Where the activity is going on.
Because he doesn't sustain, and he won't sustain in the field. Because he made a very tantalizing start. He was talking about the sky got dark, and he talked to his wife, you see. But he talked loud where everyone could hear him. He said, Ida Mae, you remember that down in Belle Glade? Good Lord, I've never seen a sky like that. It'd get dark, and the sun come out firing red, you'd think it was a judgment day. No, I got out of there. I didn't stay down there more than a year. And that sounded pretty rich, because then he mentioned something about a white man that used to let him run the house. The white man would go off somewhere, and John would get the keys, and he would feed the chickens and the horses and the hogs and take care of the house. But he didn't go into it. He just made the point about the sky and then shifted on to something else. And it was just kind of making talk and keeping things going. And that's what he would do out in the field. If it ever started to slow down and get quiet, anything that came to mind, he'd do it just to keep some talk going. If he'd call out, "Mary, how you doing?" And Mary didn't answer, well, first thing that came to mind was Mary had a little lamb, so he sang the song. And when it came time to get water, he didn't say, "Well, excuse me, I'm going to get some water." He said, "Well, I'm getting thirsty, I think. You know, I think I'll just get me a drink of water." Like he's thinking to himself, but it's so loud that it carries all the way down nine roads. So everybody gets involved. And so he seems to have ability where everybody else would break off and talk in little groups. When John's there, everybody talks together. He's got a control.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, I remember he got a little flat, got quiet, but John wasn't talking. And he said, "You know, it's getting quiet around here. That makes the work harder."
Oh, makes the work harder.
Makes the work harder. So that's, he knows field work. Lord, he must know it. Because as tired as he gets, you never really see it. He might yawn, and he might slow down, and he might take his shoes off and work barefoot. But you never see him grit his teeth and just try to force it. Just try to get to the end of the row and then sit down and rest. He'll enjoy as much as he can all the way down.
Uh-huh.
He'll keep talking. And
uh-huh.
Everybody else more or less gets tired. I mean, they start giving out, and they don't want to talk. They want to just, "Let's get down, let's get it done and get out." But not John Turner. When he got tired and took a rest at the car, I mean, he was tired. And he was looking for a reason to rest. And one of the reasons was, "Well, I'll bring the truck up a little closer because the rain's coming and we're going to have to tote these crates." And he leaned on that car and he rested. And I could tell he was tired. But within a few minutes, he just looked at me with a twinkle because he had something on his mind and he was going to twist it. And he turned that rest into something to bait his wife. And he'd say, "Now she's spent, I don't think I don't love her." And he waited for his wife to look that way, and she didn't. So he just said out loud, "Boy, I bet she's going to wonder. I bet she's going to think I don't love her. Just sitting over here, not working." And finally she looked up, see. She didn't say anything. So that's all John wanted, just for her to see. And he got back, he more or less set himself up to get scolded. He didn't care.
Yeah.
So. He was right amusing about it.
So he's manipulating the help, or he's working on the help all the time.
All the time. He's got his eye on everybody. He really does.
Oh.
And the amazing thing, he wants everybody to work together in a row. He doesn't want it broken up. Because when we first started, I figured if John was probably taking two or three rows, I could just take over one of his rows. He wouldn't care, but I wondered what, you know, Debbie and I won, would have to start a new row, and I'd wonder if he'd mind if we where we started. He said, "No, start anywhere. Start at the beginning." And I said, "Well, I don't want to start way in the back. It gets lonely back there." He laughed. He said, no, start right here." And that showed up later. And Debbie had gone back, and they had finished, and I came back from the mower, and I had just a little bit left to do. And I start finishing that row, and they were all moving to other rows, and John said, "Now, you want a little help out of that row?" And I thought, why is that? You know, there's nothing there really left to pick. But what it was, see, I was going to get left behind. And so he would just help me out of that, so I'd be right with the group the whole time. So see, he's got his eyes open.
Yeah.
Keeps all those pickers together. And Tuck, you see, went ahead. While they took a break, Tuck kept on working. And got kind of out of sight, because the land sloped down. He was short and the weeds were high. So John would just keep calling out, "How you doing, Tuck? Where's Tuck? Did he fall into a hole?" So he just kept that communication the whole time.
Yeah.
And of course, you don't really ever notice it.
Yeah.
He's right gifted in it.
Yeah, and he got his voice. He's
strong. Mm-hmm. Stay that voice. That voice. It'll carry all the way across the field.
Yeah. I wonder if John, if that John feels like he's a big black nigger. I think he does have an idea. He doesn't care if he is.
I'm pretty sure he knows he can perform.
Yeah.
Pretty sure he knows about that voice. Because he uses it too well not to. Too well.
Now he sang, what was it, the water song?
I got a new life in the water.
Yeah,
just a hymn. He just sang a line.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
But he kept singing it over while he danced out.
Yeah. Got a new life in the water.
Do they seem to pay attention to him?
Nobody looks up, but they miss him when he's gone.
Yeah.
You can just kind of feel everybody kind of break up a little. That rhythm is gone.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't know if all of them want to pick next to John because he would push him, make him go. But when he's not there, they don't. He holds them together.
Well, now, they were really mostly children out there.
Yeah, I'd say all were between 12 and, say, 17.
Yes.
I'd say half of them, at least.
Just John and his wife.
And Louise might be 30 or 40.
Yeah.
And Tuck. So that's four, I'd say, were over 30.
But the rest of them were children.
I don't know how old those the girls were, but I wouldn't think any of them would be more than 18.
Did they ever say anything?
Between themselves, maybe, but you could never hear it, you see.
Oh.
There wasn't much talk there.
They talked mostly by the adults.
Mostly by John.
Yeah.
I don't think Louise, I didn't hear her say a word, in fact. You know, other than just the answer.
Yeah. But it missed time.
And I didn't hear her too much either.
Yeah. Well?
It's John's show. Because when he stopped, it was just quiet. And he'd say, let's get quiet here.
Yeah. Well, do you suppose that's the way it is everywhere he goes?
Well, when I pick peas with him. Now, I think it was Louise and somebody else talked. They talked about a car accident. It was pretty grim. And that held them for, I guess, half of the pickings. And the rest of the time, it was all John's cues that they used. I mean, they talked, but it was John who got them going. He'd bring up picking, and then one after another, they'd say, well, I picked here, and I picked there. Strawberries are easier, and whatnot. So I don't know. I have an idea John's a pretty rare one. Of course, he's working with his family, too. That pretty much changes it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if you could see him out picking oranges or something like that with a regular crew.
Or in a big field, like a commercial field.
Yeah.
Where they have maybe 100 people picking.
Yeah.
It'd be a lot different.
Yeah.
I can't imagine his ever just making a business out of it without some sort of light touch.
Mm-hmm.
He just has to.
Yeah, you get a feeling he's never quite serious about it. He just never really seemed very impressed.
And a lot of it, I think, is a performance for us, particularly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think when we're up there picking, or Rick's up there,
yeah,
it's a performance, particularly for us.
Oh, you think so?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can kind of get the feeling something shifts when you get there, because when I first walk out there, it's just all quiet.
Yeah.
And then John let off. And I have no way of knowing if it was the same or.
Yeah. But yeah, that's trouble.
But I was interested in what you said, out of Bill, whatever his name is. Sort of appreciated this, you felt.
You know, Debbie could see that.
Mm-hmm. I think she does. She's always kind of got a little sparkle in her eye when, you know, when John's carrying on. I think she appreciates it.
When I was up there a short time, she talked all the time. She talked to me. And I was standing between her and John Turner up there. But it was, she was the one who did the talking. She talked some, but she...
Well, now, have you got the leads for him if he ever gets over here to talk?
I don't know if we can get Field talk at the table.
Well, I don't care what you get, just so you get some of that skylarking booth.
You know, you might ask him to tell the jokes.
Oh, yeah.
And if you told the jokes, that might get him going on some of it.
Might. And maybe the dark sky. That'd be interesting to get into Bell Glade.
Yeah. Now, the one thing is getting him somehow or other out of gear, disengaged, so he won't feel like he's in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this whole season on the Peanuts, it's been disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
He did better over here when he just came over here to plow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you see, like Willie.
Mm-hmm.
Willie was going to come over here and help make hay on the shares. And it was the sessions were, they were grim.
Yeah, and you see, he had, John Turner felt pressed in a way because he had to come when he could get help.
Mm-hmm.
Sure
he didn't have to have any help when he was planting and all
no,
like that.
No, I know it. But when it's picking.
Well, that's just as wheat.
Yeah, that would be.
Well, the whole thing has been
that's
hectic.
That's right. Best time to come is when he comes and just brings his pay.
I don't know. He might do better if you just hire him out. Hire him for a day or half a day or something like that to plow. And then if he talks, it's on your time.
That's right.
I don't know.
He's sure not available when he's got a crew with him. Yeah. The best one is by himself.
Well, I don't know that. I just wonder. I never have. The only place I have ever had talk of any consequence is right in here. The only place. Outside, it never happens.
Mm-hmm.
It simply doesn't happen. In here, it doesn't always happen in here, but generally, we can cut off at least for the length of time we're in here. There's no interruptions. It can't see out for half an hour, sometimes an hour. Even when they got something to do, they disengage. See? Is that right?
Yes, the only exception to that would be the time that John Turner sat out there at the table. And if you'd had that tape recorder set up then, that would have been marvelous. That would have been the best talk while you were eating supper.
If you keep your cues now, and
that's what you build on.
And you see, we've got all these other tapes too. Now he's never really talked about Rayford when he was
not in here.
Not in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old boss.
Boss guy.
Guy at Air Mule. But he raced right through it.
Yeah, that wasn't very good that one.
Yeah. So it's just a promise of what was really there, you see. And then in here, he went on, the boss guy had a tractor, and he put him on the tractor.
Mm-hmm.
You see, he can't stay with a mule as long as it's a tractor. Okay, we ought to get him a mule. Get Cookie to get him a mule. Get him over here to use his... We ought to, and then you'd get some coal.
Mm-hmm.
But we have found that the object itself is seeds the talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little tape like George Garrard will seed the talk.
Mm-hmm.
And that one of Hughes Rudd, was that his man's name?
Mm-hmm.
On the people in New Hampshire,
yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
That will seed the talk. Except for Mr. Nealon. And he can't. He's kind of hated most of his life, it's the equivalent of it, but he can't talk to you about the new players of New Hampshire. He can't tell you a thing about the people that he's served as kind of hated.
What did you say, Debbie, about the
they have a condescending attitude?
To the county agents. Yes, they do, but I think. Because they're selling a program. And what I said was that if you're convincing somebody to do something a different way, then you have to assume that your way is right, or you wouldn't be trying to get them to do it.
Yeah.
And therefore they're wrong.
Yeah.
And if you assume you're right and somebody else is wrong, you're condescending usually to the person who's wrong.
And it's a state of mind. They're always doing
mm-hmm.
it.
That's right. They're called out there with the assumption that they know. And
they're selling it.
Mm-hmm.
They're pushing something all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now you can carry that past the county agents. You can even carry it to the dime store and the people that have those counters there.
That's right.
They may have some little condescending attitude too, you don't know.
Well, I think that's true. I think that people who are, if you're on one side of the counter, you always have sort of a condescending attitude toward the person who comes up on the other side. It doesn't matter whether you're selling hot dogs and cokes or what. You always are condescending
mm-hmm.
a little bit toward
you
the customer.
Got the
yeah.
Huh.
I used to sell cokes and hot dogs at football games all the time.
You did?
Yeah, when I was in high school. And, you know, we used to carry on all the time about the people that came to buy, you know, laugh about them and oh, look at that funny hat he's wearing or something. You know, it's condescending. It's sort of the talk that you do when you're working, too. You know, you're Harriet and there's 10 people that want a hot dog and you have to hurry and get 10 hot dogs ready.
That's right. That's right. They have to take their time back there, and they've got to. You've got to do the waiting out front.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You know, Carl, I've heard him say this a lot of times. I said, Mr. Weaver's over there. He got that bad eye. Let me tell you, while we're just standing here, we can talk a little bit and go on over and see that bad eye. He just resisted. He says, you've got to have a doctor-patient relationship, or it won't do any good.
Oh, yeah.
It's over there, as I get it, over there, they are sort of equal. And Mr. Weaver can let him speak.
He can talk back.
Find what he knows.
Yeah.
And then he can do it or not do it. But if he gets in the office.
Oh, that's right.
You kind of let down your resistance once you get in the office.
Mm-hmm.
You go in the office ready to have something done.
Doctors are a special case, anyway. I think I've worked in the hospitals enough. Everybody's always got an attitude that doctors are sort of walking on a level, just sort of above everybody else, even if you're in the office or not. You know, they know so much, and they are, right?
Yeah.
See?
Know what's going on.
Oh, and you should just see people drop things when a doctor walks into an office in a hospital. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
They'll drop everything they're doing if so much as an intern walks in.
Here's the doctor.
Here's the doctor. And all the little orderlies and all the little technicians always like to wear white coats because maybe at a distance they'll look like a doctor. That's right. They do. they wear little name tags, but you have to get up real close to see that they're just really the X-ray technician. It's a perfectly important job, I'm not saying it's not, but at a distance they might look like a doctor. Oh, and a raft of doctors, my gosh. When you get five or six of them walking around on consultation, it's just curtains for anybody on the floor.
Well, we better see what the rain did. That must have been about an inch.
Yeah, it's too wet to go after the shower.
Well, I'll be damned.
And is it?
Papi just got to get out.
Well, he doesn't have to get out in this flood.
You stay in. I'm going to get those cows up.
Well, maybe it's not all that wet.
It's wet.
Huh?
Wet. That was a good run.
You know it. Damn.